Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And yes, it is Friday, February 15th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy post-hump day, Melody.
Oh, gosh.
Didn't have a chance to tell you that on
me.
Wednesday.
Yeah, so, you missed me, didn't you?
Had to find a way to get that in for you.
Oh, lucky, lucky me. I'm so glad. And I'll tell you one thing I am glad about today. Gold is a little bit higher today as we're heading into the, it's actually a three-day weekend. So I think next week is going to be a pretty active week. But the markets were up strong today, and there isn't anything that makes sense. You know, it certainly seems the fundamentals don't apply in the world of the wacky world in which we live. And so gold today, and the New York spot price aftermarket, you're looking 880 for gold to the upside at 1322. Silver's up 17 cents at $15.86. Platinum was up $19. Finally, some showing from platinum, 810 up 2.5%. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You have to be patient with some of these investments that you make into the precious metals, because they are all going to perform. Platinum is going to take its place in its normal reign of things, where it sells higher, or at least similar to the price of gold. And we know where gold's heading. And palladium, with the big swings that we see, you know, we don't know what the top of that is going to be. So palladium also had a nice day, not as good as platinum, up $17 at $1,441, with it being up just a little under 1.25%. So a great day in the precious metals. Took a little bit for it to take off like that until after it was, you know, mid-afternoon before they really started to take off. The USDX, not a lot of change there, down 0.12 at 96.87. Crude oil was up $1.34 at 55.75. And the paper markets, an incredible 444 points on the Dow, 25,883. The NASDAQ was up 45 at 7,472. The S&P was up 29 at 2,775. 10-year yield, 2.67%. The euro, 113. You know, Germany was up strong. Asian markets were down. Let's see. Fear and greed index, getting stronger, getting greedier. 70 is the number. And remember, what, a month ago, month and a half ago, that number was at, what, 6? That's how quick things turn around. That's how quick people, short memories, ladies and gentlemen, short memories. And, you know, yesterday, Dave, I was pretty fired up coming back after being away for so many days. And there's so many things to talk about. And so I'm kind of winding down a little bit for today, but I'm still a little fired up because the world is insane. The world is insane. You have, we all know, we did talk about this yesterday about Trump signing the spending bill with also declaring the national emergency. That was all done today, and that'll keep the government open until the end of September. And the national emergency, of course, was to gain about, what, $8 billion to finish or to build the border wall. I'm not sure if that completes the money that would go for the wall or not. And so this, they were able to dodge the shutdown. And it is, I don't think declaring a national emergency is a lawless act, as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said. They've done plenty of them since it was first written, I believe, or passed in, what, 1976, I believe. Every president has done them for various reasons. So I don't know if it's a lawless act, if it's been done before. I don't believe in it. I don't think it should have been done, but I don't like the executive orders either. That's not how it was meant to be. So it's, you know, you can get tossed around, but no, I just, and I listened to the talk shows this morning, and a lot of the talk show hosts were saying, well, you know, in the, you know, when we went into the government shutdown, no, I wasn't for the emergency, the national emergency, but see, in the process since then, you know, I've changed my mind and so forth. It really isn't about the border when it comes to the national emergency, in my view. It's a national emergency act to begin with. I don't think it should be, but it's not what it was it isn't what it was intended. So the so Dave,
well, we'll see what happens. I mean, certainly there's going to be a court challenge. It depends how many challenges, if there will be you know, separate ones by the Democrats in Congress, of course, and whether other private groups or even individuals decide to file based on constitutional questions, I think we'll know pretty quickly. The conventional wisdom is that some suits could be filed as early as next week. Trump himself fully expects an action to be filed, one or more actions in the Ninth Circuit, which has certainly not been friendly to his administration on other issues. But we will see. I think, you know, the bigger issue here, besides the constitutionality of the declaration of emergency per se, is going to be how much flexibility the president has to move funds around, as the White House, the Trump administration apparently intends to do. As you mentioned, the White House has identified about $8 billion for the border wall for now. You know, $600 million for the from the Treasury Department's forfeiture fund, $2.5 billion from drug interdiction funds, $3.6 billion for military construction, which I think is the big question as far as future add-ons are concerned. There was one congressional aide who yesterday told one of the news agencies that as much as $21 billion he thought could be made available from military construction budget line items for the purpose of the wall. That's a big stretch. Certainly a big sum of money. And of course, there's the $1.4 billion from the appropriations just passed by Congress. As they say in the halls of justice, Melody, see in court.
Well, you know, everyone is so focused on the wall and the money and the emergency declaration. And I'm going to look into this a little bit more, but, you know, you don't hear a lot of talk about the catch and release. What were the changes there? You didn't hear much. And this could be me. We've been busy today. So, you know, and again, this is something I have to look into this weekend, and we'll talk a little bit more about it next week. But DACA, some of these other, you know, how have they fit into this bill that he signed and so forth? So I believe they increased the catch and release. I was actually reading earlier about how they were planning on putting ankle monitors. And it's like, I don't get it. Why would you catch and release, and let them come into the, if you catch them and release them back in Mexico? I mean, how hard is it? Why? You know, and the ankle monitors are probably not that effective anyway. So, I mean, it's so much of this that you don't hear anybody talk about that much. Some of it is just doesn't make any sense. But everybody is focusing on the money and the wall, all this other stuff is going on that no one's paying any attention to. And it's just, I don't know, it's just bizarre. And, you know, it's mind-boggling. It's nuts. It's insanity.
Beats me, too. The ankle bracelet idea just seems like a colossal waste of money.
Catch, release in Mexico. How hard is that? How hard is that?
Now, Doc, I can tell you there's nothing in this spending bill that affects DACA.
So that means you're saving
the Dreamers.
It. Yeah. So that means they're saving it for another leverage chip, bargaining chip in the future. So we're going to have to go through all this stuff once again, right?
Well, this funding takes us through the end of the fiscal year, which is the one of the few good pieces of news in my mind, besides avoiding the craziness of another shutdown. But I forget the dates now, but there is some debt limit.
Debt ceiling,
yeah, that issue extension that'll be coming up prior to September 30th, I do believe. So that, in fact, could be, the date that will be used as further leverage for either more wall funding or on the other side for some action protection for the so-called Dreamers.
Well, I'll bet. I don't know, but it would be amazing that they didn't include the debt ceiling extension somewhere in this bill to cover it all, so they don't have to talk about it. Now, I don't know if that's a separate issue, if they could have added it, or did they? We don't know yet. Because you know what? The people that voted for it, they didn't have a chance to read it either. So again, they voted on something and passed something they didn't get a chance to read. So who knows what's in there? Because everybody's focused on one thing. It's bizarre. It's crazy. It's nuts. And they should all be pushed out of Washington. They're worthless. Anyway. What's next?
Well, on the trade front, talks between China and the U.S. This week made important progress. At least that's what President Xi Jinping of China told top U.S. trade negotiators today. Xi apparently added that efforts would continue in Washington next week to resolve their differences over the bruising trade war. But there was a cautionary note from the White House, which said much work remains. Now, Xi met with Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Rep, and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin today in Beijing after a full week of trade negotiations at the senior and deputy levels, that called for a deal both sides could accept. U.S. duties on $200 billion worth of imports from China are set to rise to 25% from 10% if no deal is reached by March 1st. You know, that's to address U.S. demands that China curb forced technology transfers and better enforce intellectual property rights.
Well, you know, neither country has yet offered any new details of just how they might de-escalate the tariff war. President Trump said this week that an extension of the tariff deadline was possible if a real deal was close. Larry Kudlow said that the White House had made no such decision. And it's interesting, though, because what I think is interesting, at least this time they made, remember when they were down in the, was it the G20 meeting? And President Trump made statements about how great, you know, we've done this with the trade deal with China, and, you know, and then China came out and said, well, we didn't do no such thing. We didn't make that announcement, or we don't concur with that, and so forth. This time, at least, President Xi Jinping told negotiators today that they were making progress, and Trump said the same thing when he did his 10 o'clock press conference this morning when he announced what he was going to do with that. So they came out together and said that there has been progress. So you'd have to think that, you know, they really have had some progress. So we'll see, Dave, if that is the case.
Yeah, we will. You know, several members of Congress in both houses have been urging Trump in recent weeks to not settle for any deal that's based largely on Chinese purchases of, say, farm and energy commodities. The real teeth with them, you know, are over the intellectual property issues that and the forced technology transfers that we mentioned just a minute ago. So it, you know, a lot of work remains to be done in the next, 2 weeks to avoid, you know, these significant tariff increases from kicking in.
You know, what I also found interesting is the car buyers. The White House is considering a 20% car tariff. And the Commerce Department is concluding their investigation into whether imported cars and parts pose a, here we go, a national security threat. If you want anything done in the U.S. government anymore, just tag on a national security threat and you can have anything.
Yes, that good old Section 232.
Yeah, national security threat under the U.S. trade law. And, of course, I guess with a deadline this coming Sunday to submit its findings to the president, President Trump has already voiced support for levies of 20%. If the tariffs are imposed, prices of cars from Japan, Germany, South Korea, they would rise pretty sharply. And but again, we don't know if these countries would receive any type of exemptions. So, but buyers of domestically produced cars could be shelling out more too if tariffs are imposed on components, since between 40 and 50% of the average U.S.-built vehicle is assembled with foreign made components. So these tariffs are on a tax on U.S. companies, and ultimately there will be an additional expense on the U.S. consumer. We'll finish this up when we get back from the break. That went by quick. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away. I don't know what to say. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's a great time to be buying your gold and silvers. Get to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, where you can listen to these radio programs live and archived. And you can sign up for the weekly newsletter at the little mailbox. Give us your name and your email address, and you'll get that on a weekly basis, along with Dave's blog. And we're going to have a whole lot of exciting things coming to you from the website. We just got to, you know, things get, it gets busy here at Discount, and it takes time in order to get a lot of these things completed. So it's going to be a lot of exciting things from the website. So please stay tuned. DGScoins.com. Dave, let's finish up the tariffs on the automobiles. I don't know if there was anything else there. We know that, again, this is an idea. We know that the Commerce Department has to conclude its investigation and give the information to President Trump.
Well, you know, Trump, we know, has touted previous tariffs that he's and his administration has developed under this national security law, the ones on steel and aluminum imports, for example, as a way to protect vital American industries from unfair foreign competition. But in the case of auto tariffs, there's been virtually no backing from the domestic industry. Although interesting, the UAW, the United Auto Workers, has voiced cautious support. Detroit automakers, you know, foreign brands operating in the U.S. and auto parts suppliers worry that any duties, any tariffs, would disrupt their increasingly international supply chains and lead to retaliatory tariffs on their, you know, on their exports. Car assemblers and part makers are already paying more for steel and aluminum, you know, due to tariffs. Dealers worried, obviously, about declining sales. So, you know, as one economist quipped, you know, people are waiting to see where the chips may fall.
Do we make any auto parts in the United States anymore?
Boy, good question. I believe we do, but so many of them are, you know, Canada, Mexico, you know, and Japan, other countries. But I got to believe some are made here. I just don't know the answer.
I know we have a lot of suppliers. I know we have a lot of suppliers, but I don't know if we actually manufacture. Yeah, I don't, because I know a lot of them, I know the big ones, you know, closed down. But anyway, because I'm thinking if they, you know, if those tariffs are attached to auto parts, if we make auto parts, that is, yeah. Anyway.
Tit for tat.
Well, yeah.
That's the danger.
Yeah, it is. Again, there's more polls showing that there's a greater chance of recession. There is 1 in 4 chance of recession in the next 12 months. You know, supposedly that would keep the Federal Reserve from raising interest rates next month. Already we're talking about the interest rates for next month. I think that he will hold, but we'll have to wait and see what's going on. Hey, if we continue to have 400 or 500 days up in the stock market, Dave, how can he hold?
Mm-hmm.
You
good
know,
question.
He, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the data to back it up.
Whoa, Nelly. Yeah, it's, you know, particularly with more and more forecasts showing slower growth in the U.S. in particular. You know, the, I believe it's the Fed who currently is projecting an average of 2.4%. That's a downgrade from January and the lowest since April last year, although some highly credible economists, mainstream economists, are saying now, you know, it could be as low as 2% this year. Then the part of that is due to the 35-day government shutdown, which, you know, they're still and are going to be tallying the effect of probably for the next several weeks.
You know, in this report, there was a couple of economists had polled forecasts that the Fed to keep rates on hold. And 51 of 101 economists said the Fed would take the funds rate to 2.5% to 2.75%. It seems like everything now is just always split down the road, almost. It's like almost everything's half and half, 50-50. Everything is divided equally. I don't know. It's,
you know what that shows in my mind?
That we're in trouble.
A lot of, yeah, really, a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
That things are so volatile that these professionals, who in many cases make their lives and certainly their reputations based on the quality of their forecasts, you know, it used to be, you know, these forecasters would target a single number. 2.4%, for example, or 2.0% projected GDP growth this year. Now you almost always see a range, more and more, you know, of whatever from, you know, 0.25%, and it, to me, it just shows the degree of uncertainty that's out there now, given the volatility, and just as you mentioned, the divisiveness of policymakers, and it makes it all that more difficult for the rest of us who do pay attention to these kinds of numbers and making investment decisions. Think about gold, though. It's always a good time to invest in gold. That's the thing. Are there better times than others? Perhaps, relatively speaking, but the thing about gold, and you can talk about it in more detail if you wish, Melody, there's just not a bad time. It's a safe haven, and especially in general times of downturns, I mean, that's typically, you know, it's not, there's not a better time than now. So,
you know, sometimes looking at why gold is, you know, kind of stuck in this trading range, and we've seen it stuck in a trading range. This isn't the first time. We've seen it historically. It gets into these periods of trading ranges. As long as we have a fiat dollar, we're going to have unlimited spending coming out of D.C. It's going to take more of those dollars to buy things. I mean, those are the fundamentals. It doesn't change. You can't change something and think that you're going to have a better outcome. It's not going to work. I don't care what the main issue is at any given point along the way. The bottom line is fiat currency weakens your money, the purchasing power. And along that way, gold is there to provide all the benefits that real money provide. And it's gold is money, period. The U.S. dollars is not. It's debt. Debt, a promise. It's a promise to pay. Which would you rather have, real money or just a promise? And it's really that simple. Oh, I can make it complicated if you want. You know, we can talk about a little more of the Federal Reserve and, you know, how they've were created and how they adjust things with the, yeah, we can make it real complicated for you if you like. But the bottom line is it's really simple. And you're right, Dave. There's periods it might be a little, you know, a better time, but as long as we have that fiat dollar, the value of that gold protecting your purchasing power remains. I was talking to someone today, Dave, and he says, you know, Melody, he says, what's going on, the amount of money that, you know, everything is going, it's really scary, and, you know, like, God, I'm buying gold, you know, to preserve, so in the future I can do this, this, and that. I says, you know what, if gold stayed at $1,300 today, and there is a crisis, financial crisis, and you have the stock market correct, your purchasing power is still intact when everybody else loses theirs. It's all relative. You know, if you have real estate values dropping like we saw in 2008, you know, gold responded, it did, and I expected to do it again. But the price of gold is relative. So it's protecting your purchasing power. Even though we've seen a trading range between 1150 and 1300 a day, you really have to take a longer view in gold than your normal paper investments. So you're right, Dave. It's always a good time to buy gold. And I can't stress that enough. So I hear people say, oh, I'm going to wait till it drops. Drop to what? Drop to what? So I don't want to hear the calls. Melody, I wish I had listened to you. Melody, I'm here. I wish I had listened to you when you had said that how many times ago. You know, do you know how many times I hear that? I wish I listened to you. I wish I had listened to you. Yeah, anyway, it's 800-375-4188. Don't get me started. I don't want to sound like I'm preaching.
Too late.
But I
Not
am.
Preaching. Too late.
No, consumer sentiment.
It's important.
It is important.
It's important.
And I just want to, I'm not going off onto a different area, but I was reading from the Conservative Review today, the bipartisan spending binge, what's going on today, and how we're now $22 trillion. We know it's more than that, but we're taking their number, $22 trillion in debt. We have gone deeper in debt for everything except the core function of the federal government. Back in 1995, Newt Gingrich, he said during his infamous shutdown fight, warning about the dire consequences of crossing the $5 trillion debt milestone. Now you don't even hear Newt Gingrich mention anything about the debt. The Tea Party, they hammered on how Obama and Pelosi at that point in time, Congress took the debt to $14 trillion in such a short period of time. Now over 8 years, in various degrees of GOP control of Congress, we've crossed $22 trillion, expanding the debt more rapidly than at any time in our history. It has now increased $8 trillion just since Republicans controlled the House in 2011, and by $4 trillion over the past 4 years since they controlled at least two of the three political organs of government. It truly is, Dave, it is mind-boggling. The numbers and how quick that this is all, it's a party. We're throwing money down a rat hole. This money is being created and spent at a time when our economy is good and we can't even do infrastructure. Doesn't anybody see any problems with this?
As long as you have a central bank that can continue to print money at its whim, I think more and more fiscal conservatives in particular are beginning to feel less and less that debt doesn't matter anymore. And it's a crying shame.
Yes, because it's not their, you're right, it's not their money. Remember going into business, I can remember years and years ago, it was always, hey, you always want to use other people's money. Use other people's money. Well, it's the taxpayers' money that's being used. So they don't care. They're going to continue to do it until the cows come home.
But guess
because
what?
Because it's not their money. It's your money.
It's your money.
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's your money. It's our money. We've got to care.
We do. We have to care.
And we need to elect people to office who are going to care once again. Maybe too late.
Reality,
you know. But
we have the interest payments on the debt. Net interest payments for the first quarter are up $100 billion. That is an annualized pace of $400 billion, almost twice the level it has been in recent years. And this is just beginning. The health care, I mean, listen to this number. Federal spending on health care, and this is not including state expenditures, is projected to be $17 trillion over the next 10 years, dwarfing the cost of Social Security and the military. 10 years, $17 trillion. By 2047, healthcare spending will be about 25% greater than the insolvent and crushing cost of Social Security. Well, it won't be around in that, but let's just pretend that it's going to be at the same level as what it is today in the projections. Healthcare itself is the largest driver of this crisis. This is the crisis. I said yesterday, our care is in crisis mode. This is a real crisis. And I mean, the numbers are incredible when you think about it. So let's add, this is just healthcare, let's add 17 to the 22 that so debt will matter one day. And then I read today, and again, I'm not bashing the Trump administration, and I think he was listening to the program today, because I said, you know, I wish President Trump would at least be going out there talking about the good things that he does. And when he did his little 10 o'clock speech today, that's what he did. But today, you have a new program, a new entitlement program. Republican senators met with Ivanka Trump to see how they can create a new entitlement of paid family leave like they have in Europe, but of course without adding to the deficit and distorting our job market. Really? Do you think they'll find some conservative way? How do they expect to pay for this? Again, they're changing the terms. This is a new entitlement. Do we need any more new entitlements? What we need is a break. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be all Dave when we come back from this break. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey light system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the last segment of the program today, brevity is golden, and we're going to talk about cows. 1,800 dairy cows in the state of Washington.
It's true, Melody. Cows. A surprise blizzard in Washington State last weekend caused the death of more than 1,800 dairy cows across little more than just a dozen farms. Aww. That's leaving farmers to find a way to dispose of cattle that were a key source and are a key source of their livelihood. You know, a dry region of the state, the Yakima Valley, is host to a number of dairy farms that use open lots for their cows instead of, you know, housing them in buildings. They're in these farms without walls. So that's typically not a problem because the area only gets, you know, 6 to 8 inches of rain per year. But on Saturday, farmer said that a storm forecast to bring 3 to 5 inches of snow, already a large snowfall by their standards, suddenly dropped 2 feet.
Oh, my.
With winds of 40 to 50 miles per hour and gusts up to 80. Jason Sheehan, who's run a dairy farm of 5,000 cattle for 17 years in the valley, you know, on Saturday, more than 200 of his cows were killed in the storm. He said he's never seen anything like it, adding it's only the latest challenge for struggling dairy producers like him. He said it's been 4 years of razor-thin margins and losses. Sheehan employs 35 people on his dairy farm. And added, we've been struggling financially for 4 years, and now Mother Nature's throwing another twist. It's a tough time to be taking this on. Now, most of the farms in the area are medium to large dairies that milk 3,000 to 5,000 cows apiece. Farmers definitely were not prepared for a storm of this magnitude, but did what they could to protect their herds. Some went so far as to build walls out of hay bales. To provide the cows some shelter. But to stay warm in the dropping temperatures, the cows had to cluster together. And cluster they did, and some were trampled or crushed in the process. Farmers just couldn't get to the animals, which, you know, each weigh around 1,200 pounds on average, to move them. It's just brutal for dairy farmers. Compared to 2013, total farm income on average is down 40%. Name an industry that has to maintain the same cost base, take a 40% hit, and keep going? You'd be hard-pressed to find it. Cows themselves are worth on average about $2,000 each, meaning that the farmers collectively lost $3.6 million, as well as the milk those dead animals produced. Sheehan said that during the storm, his farm had to stop milking for the first time since it opened 21 years ago. No, what's that? 41 years ago in 1978. It's also the first time he ever remembers milk trucks not making the rounds to pick up milk, as the area usually is spared such extreme weather, but presumably the trucks just couldn't get out to the remote farms. Sheehan said there were a whole bunch of dairymen working in that storm trying to do whatever they could for all these animals. We have a really great team of people around here, he continued, and all these employees put their heart and soul into this, and there are a lot of tears around here these days. And that, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Yeah, it's such a shame because, I mean, usually cattle, I mean, they can weather that type of those temperatures, but being in that area, they just weren't prepared for And again, this comes back to always worst case scenario, ladies and gentlemen, be prepared. And even though it doesn't happen, if it did, you know, you wouldn't be hurt. So
that 100-year storm just wiped out a lot of people's profits this year.
Well, they really did. The farmers, dairy farmers really have had a hard time in the past 4 or 5 years. And again, I talk about this periodically, but we're going to keep going and change the topic here as we head into, we're going to start, we'll see how this goes. And we're going to start a, where we're going to go through lots of headlines very briefly. Although, since I've been in such a talkative mood, Dave, I don't know if we can.
If you can be trusted to not expound, that's the beauty of so many headlines.
Is this it? Oh, I promise I'm going to just stick to the headlines. We'll see.
Go for it.
Okay. First, let's see. Where do we want to start? What about Massachusetts?
Go for it.
Former Republican governor from Massachusetts, William Held, has launched a surprising primary challenge against President Trump.
That is a surprise.
Why is that a surprise?
Oh, who'd have thunk that anyone would dare challenge this current commander-in-chief?
Yeah, I couldn't figure out why.
Well, he ran last time as an independent for a while. But, you know, in my mind, my question is now, will that open the gates to additional Republican challengers? I don't know.
I didn't know that you would have a challenger when you have the incumbent.
It's rare. It's not unheard of, but it's unusual.
Very unusual. But yeah, you're right. Does it open the door for others?
I don't know. Only John Kasich knows for sure. Well, the Senate yesterday, as most listeners know, by a vote of 55-45, confirmed William Barr as Attorney General to lead the Justice Department. Goodbye, General Whitaker.
Oil prices climbed to a three-month high today, driven by signs of a shrinking global supply.
Dang. And the number of blocked merger and acquisition deals are falling as companies show a willingness to compromise.
Now, I'm not sure what this is. I don't know why they would be ditching Starbucks. Maybe perhaps old Schultz running for president as an independent and so forth. But it seems like they're ditching Starbucks for a different coffee.
Interesting. That'll be fun to watch over the next several months. We'll keep you abreast of that change, ladies and gentlemen, because we know that a lot of you love your morning coffee. Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett's
morning,
right.
Afternoon.
Yes, pardon moi. This is interesting. Warren Buffett's right-hand man, Charlie Munger, says states like California and Connecticut are stupid for driving rich people away. I think we had a segment on 2 weeks ago that talked about state taxes that were driving a lot of multimillionaire and billionaires away, particularly to Florida, South Florida.
But it's also the federal taxes now. The change in the federal taxes and the tax reform that they had last year also affects those with high dollar homes and so forth in states like California, Connecticut, New York, is also helping people move away. So it's just not the states; it's also the federal government with their changes are making people wanting to move. So, but yeah, he's right. I mean, you'd want to do everything to try to keep your wealthy people. But again, what taxes do they pay? They have so many different ways in which they can avoid and finding ways to avoid paying taxes. Tax refunds are down. Speaking of taxes, tax refunds are down 8.7% this year. But experts say it's just too early to tell if this is the new normal.
Get with it, everybody. Watch your W-4 withholding certificate. Nancy Pelosi warns the GOP that a Democratic president could declare gun violence as a national emergency. Hold on to your hats.
Well, of course, if they did that, that would certainly be challenged, and it would have to go to the Supreme Court like this one is, so we're not sure that they'd be able to get it done or not. You know, I'm sure they wouldn't be able to get it done.
I think just a threat probably directed at Republicans in Congress to get the president to back down on this one.
A Tampa man reported income of $18,497, and the IRS sends him a refund check for $980,000.
Melody, I know how I'm filing my income tax this year. I'll let you know how we make out. Pepsi Company plans to shed jobs and close plants over the next few years as part of a new restructuring program. No word yet on the number of jobs or plants that they plan to close.
Record EU trade surplus in U.S. could put Trump truce at risk.
Wonder if that's part of this talk of the car tariffs.
Could be.
Maybe. Now, this isn't meant to be a partisan statement. It's just a headline that we're reading today. Waiting for Biden. The 2020 field is incomplete until Joe decides yes or no.
It's such, you know what? It truly is pathetic. It truly is pathetic that these Democrats and that, they're setting themselves up to lose. I mean, I don't want, you know, I don't want them to win, but I mean, they're setting themselves up to lose. It's just, again, distractions, ladies and gentlemen, on both sides. And last but not least, Walmart has put trailers of virtual reality technology in its parking lots, which plans to bring it to their stores.
Interesting. You can see a bunch I'll tell you, talk about, taking your kids to the supermarket. Boy, just drop them off at the trailer. You know, they could put their virtual reality goggles on and
get programmed.
Mom and dad say, see you in a half an hour.
And my mom and dad's in there buying Walmart, the kids are out there getting programmed.
I know, right?
Hey, let's go on to move and let's go on and talk about Iran, because I think this is important and it's interesting. I saw an interview with the prime minister of Iran, and he was pretty tough.
There's a lot of
scary
news this week, different angles of U.S. policy toward Iran, which apparently is hardened further in Poland and Warsaw this week as U.S. officials demanded that their European counterparts abandon the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran and suggested that Iranians rise up and overthrow the government. You know, to Washington's frustration, both Iran and the rest of the world have stuck with the deal nearly a year after the U.S. withdrew unilaterally, even as its oil exports have more than halved since the U.S. restored sanctions last November. Iran has remained compliant with the deal's restrictions on its nuclear program, so far as we know. When it withdrew from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in May of 2018, the Trump administration said the intention was to bring the Islamic Republic back to the negotiating table. U.S. officials said they sought a more comprehensive agreement that would cover Iran's regional interventions, its so-called terrorist support, plus its ballistic missile program and its imprisonment of dual nationals, primarily, Iran, naturally born Iranians who have dual citizenship, primarily in the U.S.
But, you know, it seems like the underlying motivation appears to be hope that Iran would also quit the agreement, kind of making it easier to convince the rest of the world to abandon it. European countries are far from quitting. They have come up with a payment mechanism intended to facilitate humanitarian trade with Iran at a time when the Western banks are just, you know, a little too terrified of the U.S. sanctions to attempt even to authorize business with Tehran. President or Vice President Mike Pence warning it, yeah,
or warned against
the special purpose vehicle, and said that it would only strengthen Iran. Of course, Bibi had to put in his two cents, said that the Warsaw Conference was intended to create a coalition for war against Iran, and of course a comment that was later softened to confrontation. but you know, this pressure does not have broad international support, and even though Israel and Iran's Arab rivals attended the gathering, Russia, China, Turkey, and most European foreign ministers declined.
Well, Iran is facing a bleak immediate future, reportedly. Yeah. You know, its income is expected to shrink as much as 6% this year. That on the back of falling oil exports, high inflation, and rising unemployment. Even still, Iranians are not raring for another revolution, as those like Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has continued to suggest. Thus, current U.S. policy will probably neither bring Iran back to the negotiating table nor kill the joint Iranian agreement.
They're not backing down, that's for sure. 1-800-375-4188. Monday is President's Day, so markets will be closed. So we'll be back live. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. If I got me a well-being